You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. So what if I told you that the birds you see outside, the feathered creatures who thrill and delight us, aren't real? What if I said they were part of some massive government conspiracy to keep an eye on all of us? That they were robots or drones? A growing number of largely Gen Z followers say exactly that. They say birds are all actually government drones sent to surveil us from the skies, the streets, and in our own backyards. It sounds ridiculous, and it is. And that's the point. The birds aren't real conspiracy theory is a parody. It's a movement where the leaders and adherents are all in on the joke. And it's a parody with a purpose. To not just poke fun at, but also attempt to erode the growing acceptance of false theories and disinformation. A recent New York Times profile of the movement says it started in 2017 as a spontaneous joke and then blew up with a viral social media video. Since then, it has only gained momentum and has even become a popular merchandise operation. But it also hopes to be an actual force for good. Members of the so-called Bird Brigade have attended protests and counter-protests, de-escalating tensions while eroding the credibility of the actual conspiracy theorist they march next to. While journalists and purveyors of truth bang their heads against the wall, hoping that facts and data will effectively combat false conspiracies and disinformation, you gotta wonder, is humor or parody a better way to do that? That's where we want to spend the rest of the hour discussing things. And we've got two great guests to walk us through that discussion. Dr. Joanne Miller is a professor of political science as well as psychological and brain sciences at the University of Delaware, and she's an expert on conspiracy theories and why people believe them. Dr. Miller, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Joseph Usinski is a professor of political science at the University of Miami. He studies public opinion and mass media with a focus on conspiracy theories. Dr. Usinski, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you for having me.
So I first want to get both of your reactions. As researchers who study conspiracies and political propaganda, what did you make of the birds aren't real when you first heard about it? Dr. Miller, I'll start with you.
So first I went out and bought a t-shirt. So they got me on merchandising side. So I find the movement interesting both from a psychological perspective, but more from a social perspective, that this is a group of Gen Zers who are out there trying to find a sense of community and in a sense vent their frustration with what they see as an online misinformation world by parodying it. It's in a sense, brilliant parody. The history is chock full of all sorts of conspiracy theory tropes. And so I find it interesting in the sense of the community that it creates.
Dr. Usinski, I wonder if you can talk about your reaction and then talk just a little about why Gen Z is the focus, both of the intentions here, but also of the hoped for outcomes.
Well, what I find most interesting is that it's an attempt to change people's beliefs about conspiracy theories by pointing out how ridiculous they are. The hope is that perhaps it will get people to question their own beliefs a little bit more than they seem to have been in the last few years. But a few thoughts on that. One, I wonder if it works. I wonder if people have the capacity to say, oh, the birds are real. That's really stupid, and that should get me to think about my conspiracy theories. Or do they just say, well, the birds are real, and that idea is stupid, but I'm going to hold on to my cherished conspiracy theories anyway, because mine are the true ones. This birds thing is just so goofy. And in some ways, this does play into conspiracy theorists' hands. I mean, when you go down the rabbit hole, you do find conspiracy theorists saying explicitly often that, you know, there's people in the mainstream media creating conspiracy theories that are really dumb just to make us look stupid. And right here in the New York Times is an example of exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, I'm wondering if it works and what the effect of it might be. And in other ways, I'm wondering if it's playing into conspiracy theorists' hands somewhat.
Yeah, I think that's probably my worry, too, is that, you know, something like this depends on a sense of irony that maybe not everybody has, and that it can kind of reinforce the disinformation there, or the proclivity to believe things that aren't true or have no basis in fact. I do want to go back to this question of Gen Z and talk just a little about what it is about that generation that makes this important and interesting. Dr. Yuzinski, what do you think is going on there?
Well, they are an online generation, unlike my own that started out not quite as online. And they're probably an important group of people to hit when it comes to let's guard our beliefs from whatever might happen to be on social media today. So they're an important target group for this sort of message.
Dr. Miller, you also have some thoughts about the age group that is doing this and is the target of it. Talk about what we know about Gen Z.
Sure. And to reiterate, they are an online generation. They are the first online, fully online generation. And they are very adept at social media. They are adept at social media campaigns. And so it's not surprising to me that it would be among this group that the simple original prank that started this went viral, and that they picked up on it. There's another piece of this. This started in 2017, but if we think about what's happened over the last couple of years with the pandemic, this young group of young adults who have lost a lot of face-to-face connections over the past 2-3 years now. This is, again, I keep coming back to the sense of community idea here, a way for them to connect with one another and to be in on a joke that can make them either feel superior to others, which is always a great thing. We all want to, in our own minds, feel superior to others. And they can share in that, which is very similar to what conspiracy theorists do. Mm-hmm. Right? They're part of a community that's in the know, and they know something, and they're out there trying to get out their what they know. And that that idea there, and this is where I think Dr. Yuzinski is absolutely right, gets muddled, right? That this parody of a conspiracy theory is a group of people who are, you know, sort of in the know, but what they're trying to get out is that they're in the know about this information, mm-hmm. and that they're trying to tell, but it may be too subtle. You know, as anyone who's ever lamented the fact that there isn't a sarcasm font knows, right? that sometimes subtlety is lost on people. And if I could just real quick get back to this point about whether it's effective, I think we can think about two types of people. I think we can think about people who already believe conspiracy theories.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the reasons that Dr. Yuzinski said, this is not likely to be effective for them. But then we can think about another group of young adults who may be more moldable in a way. And this parody might make them more likely to question new information that gets to them before they believe. Again, they have to catch that it's a parody, which I think most will. It's right. Absurd enough. Right, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but it is also, it is, you know, in the context of the kinds of conspiracies that are out there, it's, I mean, it, yeah, it's absurd, but it's, is it more absurd than some of the other things that we hear? I guess I'm not sure.
I know. That's where I struggle with this, because like I said at the beginning, it has all the tropes of a standard conspiracy theory. And when you get to the details, yes, it's absurd, but how many people go that far? How many people read this and say, yeah, the government does a lot of underhanded things. Yeah, they do a lot of censoring. That maybe this part isn't true, mm-hmm. but wait a minute. Right. You're right. They do a lot of things that are conspiracies or and could, you know, make other conspiracy theories seem more likely to be true.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about the birds aren't real. I want to thank Dr. Joseph Uzinski, professor of political science at the University of Miami, for being with us. I know you do have to run to another appointment, but I really appreciate the time you gave us here on Detroit today. Yeah. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Dr. Joanne Miller, but we also want to hear from you. Call and tell us, what do you think of this whole birds aren't real movement and its attempt to erode trust in false conspiracy theories through humor and parody? Do you think it's a good way to combat misinformation and disinformation in a society that is awash in it right now? Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to social media, Facebook or Twitter, for comments there, and we'll include you that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We are talking about conspiracy theories and mis- and disinformation forces that have really disrupted lots of different institutions in our country and certainly have disrupted our politics. Our guest right now is Dr. Joanne Miller, who's a professor of political science as well as psychological and brain sciences at the University of Delaware. She's an expert on conspiracy theories and why people believe them. We began the conversation by talking about the birds aren't real, a movement that was an attempt to erode trust in false conspiracy theories through humor and parody. We want to hear from you during the conversation about what you think of the birds aren't real and what you think of conspiracy theories. Is humor, is parody a way to convince people not to believe things that on their face may seem ridiculous to us, but that they absolutely hold as dear truths? Or do we just need straightforward pushback and denial of the misinformation and disinformation that's out there? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter, put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. Let's start today with Anthony in Southwest. Anthony, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Stephen and guests. Well, conspiracy theories, it's a hot topic, but, you know, there's one big one that, you know, just stands the test of time. Well, that's bigger than, I guess, JFK is a big one, but the events of September 11th, there's a bunch of family members and a couple fire chiefs and stuff who were there at Ground Zero. They'll be suing the U.S. attorney to get their evidence that we have a crime that wasn't properly investigated in front of a grand jury, their arguments will be in front of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in about 10 minutes. Do you think they're conspiracy theorists?
Well, Anthony, you know, I don't know specifically what their arguments are, but I mean, I will say that there are lots of conspiracy theories about 9/11. There are lots of people who believe that the people that we have all kind of believed were responsible for it weren't. There are people who believe that, you know, the aftermath of the towers falling made people sicker than we have known. I mean, there are lots of things about that that have cropped up since that happened. And I think it is the kind of event that is really ripe for those kind of things. It's catastrophic. It catches everyone's eye. As you point out, it is analogous, really, in size and scope and impact to the assassination of John F. Kennedy, another event that has inspired lots of conspiracy theories. So I don't know whether the arguments that are going to be made in court are conspiracies or not, but I do know that this is the kind of event that has created a lot of conspiracies. Dr. Miller, I wonder what you make of Anthony's question here.
So two things here. One, I think that the caller is keying in on the phrase conspiracy theorist. And it's true that in common parlance that calling somebody a conspiracy theorist is a way to discredit their ideas. It has a negative connotation. And in most of my writing, I try to avoid that phrase for those reasons. From a truly definitional standpoint, if we want to get really, you know, clinical about this, these are folks who are proposing a conspiracy. So if you want to call them conspiracy theorists in that way, then they are theorizing that a conspiracy occurred. Now, whether that ultimately turns out to be evidentiarily true, I'm not sure if that was a word, but true, will come to be seen. But what's interesting, I'm going to come back to this comment that you made about 9/11 and JFK. And why these two events are ripe for conspiracy theories. And it goes back to why people believe conspiracy theories in the first place. When big, negative, scary events happen, they freak us out. They make us feel like we don't have control. They make us feel powerless. And we seek out explanations for those big, scary events. Because if we can explain them, if we can understand them, we can better operate in our world. It's uncomfortable for us to believe that things happen randomly. Right? Because if it's a random event, we can't do anything about it. We can't protect ourselves in the future. So when we seek out explanations for negative, scary events, we're very much trying to find an answer. And that seeking and that motivation to find an answer can sometimes lead us down the path of a conspiracy theory. It seems odd to say that it's more comforting to believe that 9/11 was an inside job than it was an act of terrorism. But when you think about it, if it was an inside job, we very clearly know who to fight. It's our government. It's people who, you know, and it was an intentional act in a way that's not. Terrorism could happen any place. And there's something that we can fight and we can sound the alarm. And so those types of explanations are palatable or they serve the purpose, I guess, of what I'm trying to say is of helping us gain back control and gain back some certainty.
Well, and that is one of the dynamics that I think is always sort of lurking behind the belief in these theories. It is this idea that, hey, I actually know what's going on and I have the answers that you don't, because you're believing the narrative that we don't understand this. And I think there's a level of comfort that comes from that. And then there's also a sense of superiority that comes from that, right? I'm not just parroting or believing the things that we're being told. I know better. I've found, a better explanation. And so, I mean, I think that's where all of that kind of comes from. Again, Anthony, really appreciate the call and the comments and the question. Let's go next to Jimmy in Birmingham. Jimmy, what's on your mind?
Hey, happy Friday.
Yes, happy Friday to you.
I was telling Jake, I grew up on the west side of the state, been a Metro Detroiter for over 20 years now. My family all still lives there. They're not listening, so I can talk about them. It's fine. I said the word debate to Jake when I was discussing conversations like this with my mom. And, what I realized is that these are not debates. Debates require us to agree on where we get our information. Because if we fundamentally disagree about the foundational truth of where good, solid information comes from, and we can then debate the topic at hand. My mom and I disagree on all of these, I will call them conspiracies, that she brings to conversation from time to time. I've just had to create boundaries and say, look, Mom, I love you. I can't have a conversation with you about this because you will fundamentally just push back on where I'm getting my information. So
right.
It's just impossible, and so you talk about superiority. It's like I feel myself trying to, one-up her, and it's like this is so not healthy for me. I can't have a great relationship with my mom and also feel like I'm trying to prove something to her.
Jimmy,
I know there's a lot of psychology into this, but it really comes back to where we get information, and if there's no alignment there, it's just pointless.
Yeah.
So.
Jimmy, I really appreciate the call and that insight. Dr. Miller, what do you think of what Jimmy's saying?
Absolutely. that it's very difficult to try to convince somebody of either, whatever, if you don't have a common ground understanding or acceptance of what good, where good information comes from, for example. And this is why it's very difficult to use facts, information, to counter misinformation. Because exactly what your caller said, the questioning of that information, the information itself never gets through. And every piece of information, factual information that you provide, becomes twisted as, look, that's part of the conspiracy. This is even how much deeper it goes. So it's very difficult to combat conspiracy theories, misinformation with factual information for those reasons.
Again, Jimmy, really appreciate the call and the entertaining anecdote about your family. Let's quickly go to John on the east side. John, I've only got about a minute left, but I wanted to get you in here.
So I watch some late night television on occasion, and it is so entertaining that it's actually kind of fearful, because when Stephen Colbert starts telling a story and with a straight face, and you just listen to that, and it's funny as hell, but it's just then you stop and say,
this is making it worse.
This really is not funny at all.
Yeah. No, John, I'm glad you called and said that. Dr. Miller, I've got not long left, but go ahead and respond.
I think that's an important point. I think that's an important point about all of these parodies, that to the extent that they're making fun of, in a way that they're trying to convey the seriousness of it in the parody, but if the seriousness is lost and we're just ha-ha making fun of these silly people who believe these things and not getting at the root issues, concerns that we have, then again, they can be counterproductive.
Okay, Dr. Joanne Miller, it was really great to have you here with us for this conversation about conspiracy theories. Thanks for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Okay, that is going to do it for us this week. Come back on Monday when I'm going to talk with author Sarah Jaffe, whose new book is Work Won't Love You Back, How Devotion to Our Jobs Keeps Us Exploited, Exhausted, and Alone. This is 101.9 WDETFM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again on Monday.